It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham SC. My name's Sammy James and welcome to this special episode, another one of our big interviews. We haven't done one for a little while, but really excited to say that we're going to be speaking to former Fulham goalkeeper Marcus Bettinelli, who has left Fulham this summer after 15 years with the club. And of course, he was part of many iconic Fulham moments, including that famous win over Villa at Wembley Stadium. And joining me today to chat to Marcus is Drew Heatley.
Hiya, Sammy.
And Isabel Barker.
Hi, Sammy. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Just before we start, a quick mention for The Athletic UK, who Fulhamish have partnered with again this season. The Athletic is definitely the best place if you want to keep your finger on the pulse for all things Fulham transfers this summer. Peter Rutzler is the man in the know and will be giving you the very best analysis as the transfer window approaches its close and the season starts in August. If you want to sign up for the very best price, go to theathletic.com/Fulham Pod. Right, without further ado, let's hand over to Marcus Bettinelli. Marcus, welcome to Fulhamish.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. Lovely to talk to you. Obviously, with you just leaving the club after 15 years, I imagine it's a pretty mad emotional time for you at the moment, but fascinating for us as fans, maybe just to get a bit of insight into your life and times and career at Fulham and maybe kind of your opinions on some of the most recent years at Fulham when you were part of the first team and everything that we saw from the stands and getting your perspective on everything that you saw kind of on the pitch and in between the sticks. I think like first question is, what is the emotion like now after such a long time in one place at one club, making that big leap and finally deciding to leave Craven Cottage?
I think definitely the word emotional is probably the one word that probably strikes me first. I think when I think you've been somewhere for so long, like I have, like I know it sounds silly, but it sort of really did feel sort of like my second home. And I think, as like a lot of people know, sort of my family there, my father works there, my sister works there. So it is a very sort of family run thing sort of through my blood. But also at the same time, I'm very excited to start something new. I've sort of had to wrap my head around that the last 2 months or so. But yeah, I think when I look back on my whole Fulham career, coming through the academy and experiencing the things that I did, especially sort of with the managers that we had in the past, McGaff and stuff like that, I think, you know, there's been some really good times. There's been some rubbish times. There's also been times when it's been absolutely chaotic and I'd probably say a bit of a shambles, but also at the same time, I think, you know, I don't know what football club you go to where, you know, you don't have them ups and downs and stuff like that. So, like I said earlier, it was an emotional day. It has been sort of an emotional month, really, trying to wrap my head around it. But, you know, also, like I said, it's the end of an era. Super proud to have done everything that I've done there. And, you know, whatever happens next. But yeah, like I said, extremely proud to have to come through the academy and play Fulham for sure.
I'm going to take it back to the beginning, if that's all right, and just talk about before you made it to the first team. You're obviously on loan at Dartford and then Accrington. I just wanted to know, like, how important was it for that sort of lower league experience? And do you think that's something that's missing today? Because you get a lot of players now going direct from academy to first team football. And do you feel there's a step missing?
Yeah, for me, it was huge. And like when I look back now, I think probably without them seasons at Dartford and Accrington and probably even the smaller ones before that, like Godalming Town and Croydon, they probably, without them, probably the first year when McGaff took over and sort of I ended up finding myself in a first team spot. Probably without them experiences that I had on loan, I probably would have crumbled really. And I probably definitely wouldn't have been the goalkeeper that I am today. And I think, you know, I've always had a really good relationship with the young boys at Fulham, especially the goalies. I mean, you always sort of tend to look after your own in that sense. So, you know, you've got sort of a great sort of crop of goalkeepers coming through. And to be fair to Fulham, they always have sort of produced some great goalkeepers. And they're probably a little bit biased with my dad obviously being a big part of that. But, you know, even sort of Jesse, Dale Lethbridge, Wes Fordren and Magnus playing as well. And obviously, you know, your current number one, Marek, who's a top goalkeeper as well. So I think they've always had a good balance of 23s games, 18s games, but also still going out on loan. I know obviously Tay was out on loan last year. So I think it's key. I think if anything, I think it's more key for them goalkeepers to go out and play some games rather than the outfield boys. I'd love to sit here and say I have a massive opinion on outfield football, but I can't really do that because I'm not one of them boys. But as for the goalkeeping side, I can definitely say it's definitely key, and it kept me in good stead that year, that I sort of made my championship sort of debut.
Obviously, you know, being at Fulham, you've experienced so many relegations, ups and downs, but you know, that first relegation, it was kind of widely thought that you'd kind of finally get that chance as number one. How, I guess, frustrating was it, you know, that Girona got the nod against Ipswich on day one, I guess, going from there?
To be honest, I had done an interview the other day with Jeff and he brought up my gaff and I was like, if I go into that whole pre-season, I'd need a sort of hour and a half just on its own to speak about that whole pre-season and that whole season itself with him taking over the first sort of...
That's, I mean, you're more than welcome to. We will gladly listen because it was the most asked question by far.
To be honest, I can only sort of sum up in a couple of words of just absolutely mental. Like, I don't think I've ever experienced, or I don't think I ever will experience anything like it. It was a lot of hard work, 0 days off. Mentally punishing. It was the only way I can describe it is literally being in the army / like SAS. Like, that was literally the closest thing that I think I'll ever experience to that. And even then it was probably worse. But yeah, obviously we didn't start great. So yeah, I think when I look back, when I think probably the season before I was Akron, I don't think really I ever really had in my mind that the following season I would be playing Fulham, because in my head it was always next step's now League One, because Akron was League Two at the time. So my next step was Conference, League Two, League One, and then obviously hopefully go from there. So I kind of fast-forwarded in my career in that point and jumped on the sort of Championship bandwagon probably a year, probably too soon. But thankfully, I managed to handle it a little bit. And yeah, I think that whole pre-season, I think when Stocko left, and I knew it was out of me and Jesse was a year younger than me, I was devastated, I think, when the sort of Jesse started the season. And then I always kind of had a feeling in my head, if I get a chance, I think I'd take it. And I got my chance against Brentford in the Cup, which, again, I think at the time, I don't really realise. I knew how big the game was in terms from a fan's point of view. I don't really think it was until I got out there, and it was my sort of first time playing at Brentford Stadium. And it was obviously small, compact, and obviously the Fulham fans are literally right behind your goal. Within the first 10 minutes, I just had this feeling that, like, everyone behind me was literally right behind me, whatever I'd done. And it was a lovely feeling. And I think that stuck with me sort of from, well, all the way up until now, really. And then obviously, yeah, then we finished the game and my dad rang me, was a foul, like, well played. And then he told me, like, they just signed Gabriel Carali, and I was like, went from sky high to like down to zero, like all in the space of one night. So I was buzzing with that. And then, yeah, Gab started the next game. And then I think the next game after that, I think maybe McGaff got sacked, or maybe two games. And then, yeah, I think from then I basically played the whole season sort of when Kit come in. So when I look back to that season, it was mental, like I said, from the start of it, going from Gaff's pre-season to I'm not playing to play into, they're not playing for the back pain. It was mental, but it was still sort of one of my favourite seasons at Fulham. We done well to, I think people probably don't give Kit enough credit that season for what he'd done to sort of to be sort of 6-7 games, wherever it was, about a win to then stay up. I know it was obviously a big turning point from maybe sort of 2 years before that, obviously with Roy Hodgson and everything like that. Like, I know the fans obviously expected us to be there, and obviously we wasn't. We was down there, but you know, we done well that year to stay up after everything that happened in pre-season and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, hell of a place to make your debut. And I think maybe because it's the League Cup, you can maybe diminish it, but it was Brentford. It was one of the first times we'd faced them in years as well. And we actually won that one. Obviously, we then ended up to have a terrible record against Brentford. A 1-0 win away at Griffin Park is a pretty good place to make your debut, especially as a goalkeeper. You mentioned Kit. How crucial was he to your development? I think it's a good point you raised there, because ultimately his time, probably from a fan's perspective, is not overly positive, but yeah, it was a basket case of a club really at that point that he had to go in there and stabilize, and maybe he was the one that slightly laid the foundations for what we saw later under Slav and time in the Premier League and stuff.
For sure, without a shadow of a doubt. Like I put in my Instagram post, there's a lot of people at Fulham that do a lot of work in the back that sort of doesn't really get noticed. And I think probably Kit and sort of Martin Brennan, who was a goalie coach at the time, was definitely one of them. You know, he's had a massive part in bringing myself through, Marek through, Magnus. And obviously Kit was there. And, you know, we was a young squad. Like, I'm still good friends of sort of like George Williams and Shaw Kavanagh and obviously Woodrow and that. Like, we was a really young squad. Like, none of us was ready for that. I don't think any manager taking over sort of would have done sort of anything maybe possibly better than we actually did that season. You know, and I think when he took over, I think everyone would have said if you had offered us sort of safety at the end of the season, I think everyone would have snatched a hand off just because of where we was in the league. Like, Championship's tough enough league in itself, let alone when you're 6-7 games behind everyone and everyone's got a head start. So he done really well that season, and like you said, I think he stabilised the club when they really needed sort of stabilising a little bit. And you know, obviously the owners wanted to invest, and you know, they have done that over the last few years, and they've taken the club to next heights. And it's been a mad roller coaster of the last sort of 4 or 5 years, and I'm sure you fans have obviously all got your own opinions on it, but Kit and them boys done well that season to stabilise stuff. And you know, that shouldn't be forgotten about.
Yeah, definitely. I think Kit gave a platform to Slavisa to sort of build on. And I think, you know, obviously after he sort of had to stabilise us a little bit, we got to 2017-18. And you know, the season before, the last six games, he suddenly, you know, he put his faith in you, and then you started that season number one. I mean, on that season as a whole, was it a vindication for you that you could be trusted as a promotion-winning number one keeper?
Yes and no. I was actually really close to leaving that summer because I'd only played sort of like 5 games, and obviously I know then we lost to Reading, so I had a couple of extras on that, but I hadn't played the whole season. Butts come in, me and Butts got on really, really well, but you know, in my eyes, I was thinking, right, well, next season, whether we go off or stay in the league, you know, Butts will be Slav's number one again. So I was really close to leaving that season. I think me and Tony agreed a new deal and I stayed, and then I think probably I would have started at the start of the season, but I got injured in the last pre-season game. Can't remember who it was against, and I never started. And then Butts played, and the boys done really well. And then around Christmas time, obviously, we lost to Sunderland. Bear in mind, they hadn't won at home in like 2.5 years. And it's just such a Fulham thing to do where we go there and they win for the first time. It's like, I feel like Fulham are like the team that always breaks everybody else's bad records, like for some reason. From Sunderland, like, I don't know if everyone knew this, but we went out and had a Christmas party after that, which on another day, probably a lot of managers probably would have said like, nah, no chance, you're not going out. But
wow. After that Sunderland game.
Yeah, after the Sunderland game, we had our Christmas party booked, and we was a close-knit group, but we wasn't that close. And we went out, we stayed up in Newcastle after we lost. And like I said, I think, you know, a lot of managers would have said, nah, like, you lost one, like, you lost the game, like, no chance, you're going out, get back on the bus and get home. But for whatever reason, Slav let us go out, and from then we obviously went on that unbelievable run. And like, I know it sounds a bit cliche now, but you know, that whole night out did really bring the team together, because I know it may not seem like it sometimes, but like, when you lose a game, it does eat you up. And I think when we was in the hotel bar that night, like, the boys were still devastated about the game 4 hours before. Like I said, I know sometimes it may not seem that way from a sort of fan's point of view, and you may think people, players don't care, but we do care. And like, we obviously do have lives as well. obviously you try and forget that when you go home, whether to your family or your missus, or when you go on a night out with your friends. And it is hard to forget, but I think it just goes show. I think that night out, I'm not saying it was the cure, but it definitely brought everyone together, and we had a good time. And then, yeah, I think the confidence just grew and grew. And I think them sort of, whatever it was, 4 or 5 months of playing and winning, it was just, I don't think any of us will probably ever experience anything like that again.
You kind of mentioned that Christmas party there. Were there any kind of, I don't know, funny stories or friendships that blossomed from that Christmas party? Anyone doing some awful singing or any karaoke or anything like that?
Probably the best story that I got, we went out on the Sunday and we all had fancy dress on. And Ryan Fredericks, who's an absolute legend, managed, he never told no one, but he got the kit man to put a mini bike in the back of his van where he takes the kit off the day before. And we were meant to meet downstairs on the Sunday, and it was an hour late or whatever. And all of a sudden he just rocks in and he's got like a Jigsaw mask on from the movie Jigsaw, and he's just on the bike, little tricycle.
Oh my God.
And it was literally one of the best things I've ever seen. Still to this day, the best fancy dress costume I've seen. So, but yeah, that was it. But in terms of stories, unfortunately, I can't go too much into detail in that sense, or else
Has the fancy dress become a long running tradition? There was 18 months ago, there was quite a famous photo of the lads on a fancy dress party. I want to say it was in a Scandinavian country. Was it? Is it Denmark? Was it Copenhagen?
We did go to Stockholm. We went to Stockholm. Yeah, listen, fancy dresses, to be fair, if you've got probably one of the other lads on it, they'd probably say I'm probably the worst of fancy dress, because I'd buzz off it. Like, anytime fancy dress is mentioned, I'm all over it. So, no, we give it a good go, to be fair. You know, I think we've always had a good group for that. And like I said, some managers like that, some managers don't like that. And, you know, thankfully for us, Slav enjoyed the boys going out and team bonding and getting that chemistry together. And like I said, from obviously the Sunderland game, we all had a great time, and yeah, went on that unbelievable one, beating around.
Obviously, the promotion against Villa was an amazing moment for you. I enjoyed hearing you talk to the club website about the flair incident and stuff, and you were a massive part of that 23 match unbeaten run. What was that following summer like? It's an iconic summer, and I think Fulham are still kind of maybe paying the price in some ways after it now. It was such a huge amount of spending, such a big change in the personnel at the club, and in the goalkeeper department, we saw Sergio Rico and Fabbri come in. What was that like for you? Because, you know, there were the lads that got used to the Premier League, and whilst I imagine you all expect some change and some new faces, some impressive names from abroad to come in, but it was such a sea of change that summer. And yeah, as I said, I think Fulham have never quite recovered from that in lots of ways. So what was it like in the dressing room seeing the likes of Seri and Giesa, and then from your perspective, Rico and Fabbri, come to Motspur Park?
It was a lot. I think none of us sort of had been in that position before, where we'd just been promoted, and the team, I think, was so strong as a core. And I think one of the main sort of things that season was obviously keeping Mitro, and obviously the club managed to do that. And I think we had a really good spine, and I think losing Fredo was a massive, massive loss. I think Fredo was key to the way Slav played. And I think when Fredo didn't re-sign, I think that was a massive loss to us as players, because his pace would get us out of a lot of trouble sometimes. But
yeah,
listen, I can sit here and say, you know, that season we spent too much money, we brought in too many players, but then also at the same time, you know, like, you need to invest. You're going from a Championship to a Premier League, you know, strap-back team, and it is different. And again, like, we've seen it this season, like, obviously, the club tried to learn from probably the season before, and, you know, maybe sort of go a different way, and obviously invested well. I think they invested well again this season, but it is tough. You know, even West Brom have found that. You know, Sheffield United obviously have suffered the same feat in their second season syndrome, and it's a tough, tough league. You know, and there is a massive difference, especially from them top boys to obviously us. I know it's a game of football, and obviously everyone likes the underdog, but sometimes it's just relentless, and you never really sort of know when your next game's coming from. But yeah, from a personal point of view, and I'm sure probably a lot of the lads would say that, I think we'd done so well that previous season a lot of us felt that we deserved the chance. A lot of us never really got a chance to begin with. Some of us did get a chance and ended up sort of making our way in to get a chance. But yeah, there was a lot. And yeah, personally for me, obviously it was a mad roller coaster. I think probably 2 weeks before the start of the season, I was probably going on loan because they had bought Fabry in. Then they were bringing Sergio Rico in, and I was like, well, you know, where does that leave me here? I was like, I don't want to go and be third choice, especially after just playing sort of some of the best football that I've played from a goalkeeping point of view the previous season. So I was getting ready to go get out on loan. And then I think first game, Palace, and I think maybe the second game was Spurs maybe. I was actually number three I wasn't involved in the Crystal Palace game because I was injured, but then number three for the Spurs game. And then like 2 days later, Slav pulled me and was like, oh, listen, I'm going to put you in against Burnley. And I was ready because I was like, I'd obviously, it was a short summer because obviously the playoffs, so I was ready. And I was a little bit hungry because obviously I'd just been sort of put down a peg or two, and obviously I felt like I deserved a chance. But, you know, it was one of those things. It was, that in itself was probably a huge moment for me because never in a million years did I think, one, I'd play for Fulham when I was younger, and two, let alone in the Premier League. So that for me was massive. And that is probably, I wouldn't say a mistake because it wasn't a mistake, but maybe that's what was maybe part of the reason why a lot of them boys sort of struggled that season, because we had gone from a team of really hungry lads, knowing especially how the way Slav wanted to play. And I think we'd done all right in them first couple of games. Like, I think if you look to this season and compare this season to last season, I don't know whether getting rid of Slav sort of that sort of early on was the right thing to do. But at the same time, like I said, it's such a tough league. We ended up bringing in a sort of super experienced manager in Ranieri, which everyone at the time thought was a great appointment on paper, and it probably was. You know, obviously he's won the Premier League sort of multiple teams. He's obviously done everything in the game that he could probably do from a management point of view. So, you know, it was a smart decision, but just things haven't worked out for whatever reason. I don't think you can put the blame on any one, two people. I think from a collective point of view, things haven't gone to plan. Players haven't gone to plan. Performances haven't gone to plan, and that is, it's small margins in the Premier League, like sort of we see last season. Obviously, I wasn't there, but at one point we all thought Fulham were going to get out of it. And obviously, small margins and sort of last-minute goals against certain teams and stuff like that end up keeping you down there. So it is small margins, but, you know, like I said, I don't think you can put the blame on one person.
No, absolutely. And then, yeah, you we get through the relegation summer, and it's another one of upheaval. We got Scott Parker in the hot seat, and you start the season in 1920, and then, you know, around about November time, I think it was after a game against Hull, Parker puts in Rodak, who stays there. I mean, what was your relationship with Scott Parker? Because you would have had you would have crossed paths as players as well. I know he played in the Championship for a bit, so you would have been on the same pitch, and then he's your manager, and then he says to you, I'm going to put Rodak in. Like, how was that relationship, and what was it like for you?
I can't sit here and say a bad word about Scotty. I think, you know, that whole pre-season, I knew I was going to sort of be number one. I knew I was starting. I knew I was going to be a vital part of this team. And obviously our main goal was to get back promoted. So I knew it was going to be a long season, and it was one of the first times I had started a season. Funny enough, it was the first time I'd actually never started a season before that, like the first game. So we obviously never started great against Barnsley, but, you know, that pre-season I actually felt really, really good. I was in an unbelievable place. I just had a knee op sort of the back end of last season, so I just sort of made it back for the start of pre-season. And physically and mentally, I felt great. And then, yeah, first couple of games of the season, I just sort of, personally, from a personal point of view, I just sort of didn't really find my form. Just sort of struggling a little bit. And, you know, I think it's tough. I think, you know, what fans don't see, and maybe sometimes boys get sort of tarnished with sort of the same brushes, like they don't care, is like people have come out and obviously said it's sort of like similar to sort of Jesse Lingard and that this season. When things aren't clicking for you, it's tough because you want everything, and, you know, you expect these high standards of yourself, and when they don't work out, you know, it's tough from a mental side. So you have to be mentally strong. And yeah, like I said, I think the start of that season, I had some good games, some bad games, some good games, some bad games, and I was just up, down, and a little bit sort of similar to this season as well, where I was up at Borough. So I think it's about finding that consistency. And Scotty pulled me, I think it was after the Stoke game, and I think I gave a penalty away in the second half. And I understood, like I said, I understood, I knew I wasn't performing at my very best, and I probably agreed with him when he called me and said that. And when Marek came in, he was absolutely brilliant. And I think probably from a personal point of view, from his side, I think it was a shame that he never got more of a chance this season in the Prem, because he's a top class goalkeeper. And if he starts the season for Fulham this season, I think, he'd be probably one of the best goalkeepers in the league by a mile. So one side, obviously, I was devastated for myself because, I wasn't playing. But also on the same side, I've obviously seen Marek come through sort of the same sort of path that I'd been on, and he deserved everything that he was getting, and he deserves all the plaudits that he gets. So yeah, it was catch 22. Obviously, I was devastated I wasn't playing, but yeah, happy to see him do well. And at the end of the day, I think last season, or in any season that I was at a club, whether I was playing or I wasn't playing, I was always there. I was always with the boys. I was always been that sort of loud, vocal person to back the boys up and sort of defend them to the rafters. So, and I think you can probably see that in at Wembley, everybody on the bench all together as one team. And I think, there's probably a lot of lads that could have been sat there and been pissed off and not playing or not had enough game time. But, we were all buzzing. And I think you can see that in the celebrations of an empty Wembley Stadium. But, the scenes were just still as crazy, and the emotions were same probably the year before.
What did that last playoff final feel like as a player? Because, it kind of feels like it didn't happen sometimes, because there wasn't fans there. And I guess the time before, it was this intense high, the white wall, all the fans at Wembley with you guys celebrating. But yeah, what was the last one like, and how different was it for you as a player?
It is different because it's strange because that last one was against Brentford. It was such a more important game because it was against Brentford. And let's be brutally honest, we were underdogs going into that game. Brentford were hot favourites. I think probably the season win against Villa, we were bang hot favourites. And I think every single person in that training room when we played against Villa, I know it sounds a little bit arrogant, but we were so confident that we were going to win that game. Even though we had just been beat by Birmingham, even though we had just been beat by Derby in the first leg, and obviously we won the second leg, we were so confident. And I think probably the game against Brentford just gone in Wembley, it was different. It felt like a pre-season friendly. It never felt like the same playoff final until probably sort of 15, 20 minutes before the end of the game when we were hanging on. And I think they're both special as each other. I don't think you can compare. I think from my side, obviously, my one is always more special when we beat Villa, because obviously so many reasons. The fact that it was the first time there, the fact that it was Wembley, the fact that the white wall, and obviously I was playing and stuff like that. And, Dennis getting sent off was just made it even better, because obviously you're hanging on for dear life. But then also at the same time to see, obviously, Joe Bryan score a ridiculous goal and then go and get another goal. And again, we were underdogs. It was just as special. But yeah, for me personally, on a personal note, I think the one before that against Villa was more special for me.
I think it's important for you guys as players to know that from our perspective, that was you could not lose that game. Yeah. We could not have all those years Brentford fans having that one over us. And look, things have happened since. They've gone up, we've gone down, and we kind of have to take the criticism and the stick that we get, but ultimately we've always got that night against them, and we weren't there. We were in pubs. It was social distancing. It was shite way to watch such an important match, but you won it, and that was the most important thing for us. It was like, even if the prize we knew was probably a bit flawed, the Premier League was going to be super difficult, the fact that you won that match saved us so many red faces as fans. So I guess, thank you, Joe Bryan, as ever. Final one before we get into some listener questions. I wanted to know what the players, if they ever hear what the fans are saying on Twitter, social media, even podcasts and things like that, is it discussed in the dressing room? You'll have had your own personal ups and downs in the last kind of 5 years at Fulham. I'm sure you must have seen comments online, not just horrible hate, but people getting the wrong end of the stick, and there have been players that get really criticized from the fans. Do you guys hear it, or does it kind of wash over you? Is it water off a duck's back?
I think you'd be surprised at how much the players hear and how much the players see. I think from a social media point of view, I think it's one of the greatest things they've invented, and also I think it's one of the worst things invented. in the fact that, especially over the last sort of two weeks or so with England losing, I just think it's an absolute disgrace, some of the stuff that goes on. And from footballers, from a young age, you're always taught, you know, you've got to be mentally strong. You know, you can have people saying this, you can have people saying that, you can have people saying that. I think what probably separates our generation probably from the generation before was that things might have been written in the paper, or things might have been said maybe on Sky Sports, but then after that, or the TV, sorry, live games, and after that, they were kind of gone when you went home. Whereas at the moment, you can literally go online and everyone does it. You go down Twitter, Instagram, whatever, and you've had a bad game. All you do is obviously see negative stuff, and it's obviously not healthy. But yeah, listen, even at games, like, I think probably I look back now and I think it's absolutely ridiculous, but when we would play games on the slab and that 26 unbeaten game run, and we were maybe drawing 0-0 at half time, and that we were trying to play out from the back, and we had played out from the back then that whole sort of two seasons we've on the slab, and people in the goal behind me were hammering me, saying, get it forward, get it forward, get it forward. And you've ever sat behind me probably before, probably in a Hammersmith end of the putting, and probably you've seen me turn around and snap a few times, like, because yeah, you do hear it. And at the end of the day, you've got a job to do, and you're being told that job by that manager, and that manager wants to play you. And listen, if the manager wants to play you and he's telling you to pass it out, and I've got Jimmy and the amateur fan telling me to kick it forward, I'm passing out, because at the end of the day, Jimmy ain't going to put me in the team next week. So I do understand the frustration sometimes. I do get it, but listen, at the end of the day, like, us boys, we played football our whole life. Like, you know, we know what to do. Obviously, people go through good spells and bad spells, and people have good periods of football and bad periods of football. And, you know, Joe Bryan's been a huge part of that. Obviously, speaking about his mental health, what he suffered sort of the first year, I think it was in the Prem, when he didn't feel great. And I think everyone goes through that at different periods in their life. And I think that's probably the one thing that fans don't see. I think I've been very lucky with the fans. I think the fans have always sort of supported me really, really well. So I feel like I've been very, very lucky. But also at the same time, I've definitely had games where I've come in and seen some negative stuff. But yeah, listen, like I said, we are conditioned to block that stuff out. But yeah, I think you'd be surprised at how much boys read and how much boys sort of listen to things like podcasts and tweets and stuff like that. So yeah.
And how much Jimmy from the Hammersmith end says to you during the game. Shout out to you, mate.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we've got some listener questions for Marcus. Part two of the Fulhamish podcast. It's Sammy, Drew and Izzy, and we are still joined by Marcus Bettinelli. How you doing, Marcus?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, thank you. So we put some questions out to Twitter and Instagram to see what would come in from listeners. Yeah, an opportunity to ask an ex-player some questions and kind of to get your opinions on them, Marcus. I'm going to go off with something that's a little bit lighter here. I'm sure we'll get into some deeper stuff later. But Ad Bron Smith on Twitter asked, which player did you see in training and just think he's on a different level? He's potentially suggested Moussa Dembele, the first one, although the second one was pretty unreal as well. So, you know, which training in your 15 years at Fulham did you think, oh my God?
I'm going to say two. I would have only been a young boy at the time, but Jimmy Bullard was ridiculous.
Really?
Jimmy Bullard used to take free kicks after training sometimes, and he was a funny, funny character. And I was only a young boy at the time, like, probably won't even remember me being that young. But I used to, like, sort of go in sort of when Swartzel and Stocko couldn't be bothered to stay out. But, yeah, Jimmy was really good. And probably the other one that I think probably a lot of people say, even up until probably last season, because I know he probably still joined in training then, but was Scotty. When Scotty joined in training, he was just... like, he was another level. Like, even sort of the season we went up, he would join in possession and stuff, and he'd be the best midfielder there, and he could hardly move. He had that one ankle. So yeah, I'd probably have to say Scotty.
I actually just remember a story about Bobby Moore when he was a manager. He started off at Southend and he eventually left because he was so frustrated because the players couldn't do what he could do in training. I know it's not going to be exactly the same, but it reminds me of that.
Yeah.
We got one here from Alan on Twitter. There's been a clear change in goalkeeping over the years, he says, like being good with your feet and punching when catching looks like it's the easier and better option. Is this something that's changed over time in your career and how's it sort of affected you, I guess?
Yeah, listen, I obviously watch a lot of football, Premier League, Championship as well. And I think what fans don't realise is goalkeepers come for a lot more stuff now. And from a goalkeeping point of view, a lot of goalkeepers in the past would maybe stay on their line and not come because back in the day, goalkeepers would get battered and not get a foul. So they were like, right, well, I'm not going to come. Whereas now it's a bit different. Obviously, you've got to come and, you know, the balls are moving a bit more. The balls change every year. And I can tell you one thing, the balls don't change to help us. They change to help the outfield players score more goals if no one noticed. Yeah, listen, when they're moving, they're light, they're wet, they're slippery. You know, sometimes punching is a better option. And, you know, from a person's watching point of view, and I do get it, it looks so easy. You're there, like, put two hands up in the air and catch it. But I can assure you when you're focusing on that ball coming in and you don't know if Big Mac Smith or Aidan Flynn are coming to absolutely batter you on the other side of that, trust me, you have to think twice and think, well, what would I rather hear? Try to catch it, get battered, ball drops on the floor and someone taps it in and it's my fault, or get a clean punch on it, allow everyone to get up and regroup. You know, there's a place for punching in the game. I think if you ask any goalkeeper, it's super frustrating when people don't understand goalkeeping, question why we punch and why we catch. Yeah, it's definitely been a thing over the last few years. But trust me when I say there is a reason behind that.
Someone called D Binge on Twitter has said they have regular shamed flashbacks of drunkenly banging on about the 2018 playoff final to you being the best day of their life before requesting a picture with you. They said, "Can you please share the strangest fan interaction you've had to make them feel less bad about it?"
To be fair, you do get a lot of lads come up to you and say about that being the best day. But no, I'll tell you what, actually, is probably to the day the weirdest fan interaction I had was the geezer that ran on the pitch dressed as a big woman at Blackpool.
I remember this.
I've seen a guy actually tweet me like after it as well, actually, like every year or so, he like brings it up. But when he ran on, I had no idea that he ran on from the Fulham end. So I was like, I don't know if you remember back to that game, but we were winning 1-0, and it was like a big, big game. Like if we had lost that game, and can't remember who went down that season, but they had won that game, it would have then gone to like the last two or three games. It would have been like, and that game basically like secured our place in the championship next season. And it was a high pressure game. Like a lot of the boys were nervous before the game. We were playing Blackpool. I think might have like been relegated already. And like the pitch was honking, and he ran on, and I thought this geezer must be a Blackpool fan because he was like dressed in like pink and orange, and like I was like, has to be a Blackpool fan, and he grabbed the ball off me, and I was fuming at the start, and then I soon realised it was a Fulham fan, and I started laughing. But yeah, I still think back to that day, and I think that's probably it's probably one of the weirdest crowd like sort of interactions that I've had. Yeah.
I remember that one well because Blackpool was so frustrated at the time. I think they were trying to protest against the owners as well. So I think you would probably you'd have been right to think that it was a Blackpool fan. Sammy Finesilver says on Twitter, he first asks, how was the season in the Premier League? Which I guess you kind of touched on, you know, with Fabbri and Rico, but you obviously did get a call up to England. And how was that for you? And suddenly, you know, you've gone from a few seasons ago playing in League Two for Accrington, you eventually kind of are playing in the Championship. The next thing you know, you're with the England team. That must have been nuts, even though you didn't make it on the pitch.
Yeah, it was mental. That whole month, like I touched on earlier, like where I thought I was going out on loan and then played against Burnley, and I think we played against Brighton maybe, where I saved the pen. yeah, it would have been 2 days after. I got a phone call and it was like, oh, mate, you're in the England squad. And I was like, well, what's happening here? Like, 2 weeks ago, I was heading back to the Championship on loan and now I've just been called up. So that whole month was just like mentally exhausting. And I think like the reaction I had sort of on social media and from Fulham fans, and it was such a big thing at the time. It was massive. It was probably still to my day like the best sort of month that I've had, because I ticked so many boxes that I wanted to tick, as every young boy does want to tick, that I never probably thought that I would tick. So it was mental, but. Yeah, and I think maybe I then signed a contract, maybe like sort of a new contract, sort of maybe like 3 weeks after that. Football's a funny game. Like football's a funny game. It has like an early old saying, it goes ups and downs. But I think maybe I was England squad like maybe two or three times, and I signed my new deal and we played Cardiff away and I got dropped after that game. So it was literally like a big roller coaster of being up there and then all the way back down again. But that season was good. I enjoyed working with Fabs and Sergio. I think probably Sergio got a little bit of stick that season, but you know, I think from a goalkeeper point of view, I don't think he had a bad season. I think he was a good goalkeeper. I think the team was just in general was just, you know, a bit all over the place. I think probably I'd seen a few things. Obviously, you know, it's like, you know, fans start calling for your name to come back in because, you know, I'm sort of one of their own and such, and that's obviously lovely. But you know, Serge did a good job. So I don't know whether he got the recognition he deserved that season, but I enjoyed that season. Even though we ultimately went down, it was still something that, like, sort of, I'll look back on probably in a few years' time when I've got kids and stuff, and look back and be like, yeah, that was proud of that.
No, absolutely. We got one here, Sam on Twitter. You mentioned earlier how you're not about that outfield life, but what outfield position would you reckon you'd be best at? What have you dabbled in? You must have had a few five-a-side games at least.
I'd probably have to say centre back, because it's probably the closest thing to a goalkeeper I can get. To be fair, I'm all right heading the ball. To be fair, I remember when we played Reading in the playoff semis, wherever it was, and I come up for a last minute corner. Chrissy Martin took the ball right off my head last minute. I was absolutely devastated. I still think back to that now. And a clean run and goal, and I saw the headlines the next day in the paper, and Chrissy Martin popped up out of nowhere and flipped it on, and he went wide, and I was devastated. if I'd have to be anything, I'd probably too slow to be anywhere else, to be honest. So I'd have to be a centre back.
Could you possibly pick a favourite save? I think Mitch on Twitter was saying, what's your favourite ever save in a Fulham shirt?
The penalty against Brighton, or probably the one up against Sunderland onto the bar. I'd probably have to say them too. I think probably the importance of the penalty one was lovely. Just because it was roasting that day as well, and I remember being absolutely roasting in goal, and I remember the fans being right behind me. And I think probably the Brighton one, and yeah, the Sunderland were probably two of my favourite.
Yeah, saving a Premier League penalty is definitely got to be up there. I want to say, actually, I think one of my favourite saves of yours, which kind of then led to something else, was against Leeds in the Championship. So you, I can't remember who the Leeds player was that went through, but you did a brilliant kind of one-on-one block, and then it went all the way up the pitch and ended up with Mitro tucking it in. And it must have been something like 10 seconds between the two. It was kind of crazy, but nice for a goalkeeper almost to, you almost got the assist for that one. I know you probably didn't on the statistics, but you got a lot of credit for that one. There was also the game where you saved two penalties in the same game, Hull.
Do you know what, actually, I think back now, it was a season when Butts played most of the season. We played Ipswich at home, and I think it was my first game being played sort of that season. The ball got cut back and the boy should have scored. It was a simple tap and then a cut sort of come running over and made a big, massive, big spread. And it hit me and went out. And I remember the whole, it was the first time I think I'd ever got a standing ovation from the whole of the cottage. Probably not something that probably a lot of many people sort of remember. But I think for me, I think that was like super special, I think, because it was my first sort of game that season in the league. And it was really important because I think we went on sort of like 4 or 5 unbeaten in one game and got us into the playoffs. That was a nice feeling as well.
Well, look, thank you so much for your questions. There was a lot of questions as well that were just like, I want to tell Betsy's a legend. I'll round them up. I'll just into this feeling here. But there was a lot of good feeling for you on the tweets and the Instagrams as well. So thank you for your questions. We'll take another quick break and then we'll have a few more questions for Marcus. Part three of the Fulhamish podcast. It's Sammy, Izzy and Drew chatting to Marcus Bettinelli. We get a fantastic insight into your time at Fulham. And I guess, Marcus, without kind of trying to give away the game too much of where your future lies, it would be just really fascinating to find out a little bit of what's next for you. When did you know your time at Fulham was over, and was there any chance of you staying, or was it this a decision that you'd made a little while back that you needed to take a break from Craven Cottage and maybe seek a new challenge elsewhere?
Probably one thing that probably I should address, that saw a lot of things on sort of Twitter saying I turned down contracts and that. This was never my decision to leave Fulham. So I just want to put that out there first. While I was away on loan, I had multiple conversations with people at Fulham about sort of next season. They had obviously an option on me. And that option was getting taken up, and for whatever reason, it never got taken up. And to be honest, it got left right quite late on, to be fair. So it left me in the dark a little bit. And I think probably it comes as a big shock, especially when you're getting told, you know, that this is happening next season, you know, you're staying. So, you know, from a personal point of view, it's stuff that people don't see. You know, you plan for next season, and you know your next season with your family and your home and stuff like that. So sort of everything was sort of based in and around in London, and I think that's probably what a lot of people don't see when they talk about sort of loyalty and, you know, you should have more pride, you know, after you pay for a club and all that kind of stuff. People don't see the ruthlessness sometimes. You know, when you're wanted, it's great. You're there, and then all of a sudden, when you're not. So that's a side that sort of football fans don't see sometimes. So yeah, that, just wanted to clear that up. But that wasn't my decision. You know, the option never got taken up from Fulham's side, which got left quite late on, sadly. But yeah, for what the future holds, I don't know right now. There's definitely a few things on the table that I'm really excited about. Like I said, I would have loved to have stayed. My plan was to stay, but it wasn't in other people's plans at the club. So unfortunately, I had to obviously let everyone know, obviously via post and stuff like that, and obviously the media team put out a lovely little sort of tribute to me, which was class, sort of from Jeff and the boys and Leo and stuff. So. It was sad, but yeah, onto sort of a new chapter of my career. Like I said, Fulham has been a massive part of my life. It probably will be. I live here, you know, I see obviously a lot of fans obviously up and down Fulham Road and Kings Road a lot of the time. So everyone that sort of stops me always sort of is very polite and very kind. So I've loved my time at Fulham. Like I said, I would love to have stayed, but unfortunately not, so we'll have to see what happens next.
You're 29 now. You're entering your prime of years as a goalkeeper, right? I mean, you know, we all know that you've got a lot more longevity than the lads out on the pitch, outfield. Is it strange to think that your best days of your career are ahead of you and are going to be away from this club?
Yeah, like I touched on earlier, I think probably the last sort of probably 2 years, and probably that first season the season we got promoted with Scott, and then probably last year at Barrow, like, sort of probably struggled for form, being a little bit up and down, a bit inconsistent. So I'm looking forward to sort of finding my feet again. I think probably the last time I probably played my best football was probably under Slav. Sort of playing out from the back is something that I sort of really thrive on. So I'm looking forward to going somewhere where, you know, we play football. It's probably one of my biggest attributes is sort of hitting the fullbacks and being able to play the ball at my feet and sort of my communication. So I know that I'm a good goalkeeper. I know that I can add a lot to sort of any team that I go into. So, it's just about sort of finding my feet again and finding sort of who Marcus Bettinelli is again. And, you know, like you said, hopefully sort of my best days are in front of me and, you know, I can sort of thrive in the next couple of years.
I guess you probably can't reveal too much, but I winced a bit reading an article today that Chelsea were having a look at you as kind of third choice cover. I guess you're searingly loyal. I guess, would you ever go to a rival? And do you kind of want to be that first choice keeper at your next club?
I think whenever you go to any club, I think obviously you always want to play. I also think, you know, there's times and places where you can go to other clubs to not play and obviously try and fight your way in the door. And I think there is, you know, from a championship point of view, there's so many great goalkeepers out there that you can go and work with and learn from. And, you know, I think I'm at that point in my career now where I want to go and learn from somebody. I want to go and learn from somebody who is probably a step above me as a goalkeeper, which I've probably not had that since sort of Mark Schwarzer was there. So it would be lovely to go and learn from someone. Again, like I said, I want to go and play as well. But I'm open to all options right now. I think, you know, if we knew that maybe my option wasn't getting taken up maybe sort of 6-7 months ago, I would be in a different position right now and we wouldn't even sort of be having this podcast. But, you know, for whatever reason, I am sort of a free agent still right now and the sort of pre-season has already begun. So it's been tough in that sense. Like I said, it would have been nice to have known earlier, but for whatever reason, I wasn't told and, yeah, I've been left in the dark a bit. So I'm having to sort of find my feet very quickly and sort of adapt to something that I've never thought I'd be sort of in a position doing. So, like I said, I can't reveal too much, but I'm sort of open to anything right now.
Well, Marcus, it's been fascinating chatting to you. I just wondered, as we finish the podcast, you've had 15 years at Fulham. You've probably met hundreds, if not thousands, of Fulham fans who either stopped you in the streets or after games or signing autographs. It's been a big part of your life. So I just wanted to know if there was anything that you kind of wanted to say to Fulham fans as kind of like a parting message, really, after such a long time connected to the club.
Thank you. I think it's obviously been a whirlwind of a ride. Like I said, I feel very fortunate to have worn sort of number one shirt for sort of the many, many years as I did. You know, there's been a lot of great Fulham goalkeepers to wear over the last sort of few years. And, you know, hopefully sort of Marek can get that this season and go on to do well. So, but yeah, listen, like I said, I just want to obviously say thank you. It's been unreal. I'm sure I'll see loads of you sort of in and around sort of the Dower Arms and the ship and stuff, which, you know, is obviously everyone's local around here. So, yeah, listen, it's been a great ride. I'll always look back on sort of fun memories, and you know, I don't live too far from the cottage, so I'm sure I'll see a lot of people very soon. So once again, like I said, thank you.
Well, thank you, Marcus, and thank you for the insight on yourself, the team. It's been a really, really interesting hour in your presence. So, yeah, thank you for taking the time to do this, and thank you for speaking to Fulhamish.
Thanks very much, guys. Cheers.